forests of palm tree apartments. Scoff at the monkeys who live in their dark tents. Down by the water hole, drunk every Friday. Eating their nuts, saving their raisins for Sunday. Lions and tigers who wait in the shadows. They're fast but they're lazy and sleep in green meadows. Say a word and the boys will be right there with claws at your back to send the chill through the night air. Is it so frightening to have me at your shoulder? Thunder and lightning couldn't be bolder. I write on your tombstone, I thank you for dinner. This game that we had in the play is the winner. Well, let's
So there we have Jethro Tull with The Bungle in the Jungle from 1974 from their album War Child. It's Folk Tales on Abbey 104, and in the studio I've got Pete Chell. Hi. Pete, we've said hello, but let's find out a little bit more about your early life, because you are actually quite local, aren't you? You were born local?
Yeah, over in Yeovil, yes. Yeah, yeah. Born and bred in Yeovil. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're from a largest family, or you just
you? My mother's side of the family is very big, actually, yeah. I had a lot of cousins that I used to get up to mischief with, playing and go cycling and fishing and all sorts, you know. So, it was a very good childhood, actually, I've got to say.
Oh, lovely, yeah. And you went to school in the Yeovil area?
In Preston, yeah, Preston Comprehensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was there and... again, sort of met some very nice people. Very sporty, actually. I loved my sport.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Swimming,
yeah.
Cricket,
yeah.
Rugby, yeah. Football, everything, you know.
So school days were happy days?
They were happy days, yeah. Yeah. I probably concentrated a lot more on the sports, academic things in the first kind of couple of years, but then got my head down and realised that I'm going to have to do some work eventually. Yeah.
So were there any early signs way back then as to what career line you were likely to take?
Well, as it happens, I used to love taking things apart, love putting things back together, not necessarily in the correct order, making stuff with wood. I was always out in the garden if it was sunny with my dad's saws and his chisels and leaving them out to get rusty, which he never lets me forget, I've got to say. I had a very kind of like engineering. My dad was an engineer, and I think you do get influenced by that. And I think from that point on, I wanted to do engineering, and you know, that was my kind of career path
so
I wanted to follow.
Dad, I mean, engineering in Yeovil, you tend to think Westlands, is that?
He was hospital, actually.
Oh, hospital?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
He was medical electronics, and sort of various things with the plant around the hospital.
Yeah.
He used to take me up to the plant rooms and show me what was what. So I had a very keen interest in that, I've got to say, in the first instance.
Yeah, I see. So that may have influenced the way that your career went.
Definitely,
later.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I didn't look at any of the careers, to be honest with you. That was the thing I wanted to do, and you know, I put my head down and went for that, really.
Yeah. Okay, so happy childhood. Did you enjoy school?
I did enjoy school, actually. Yeah, I've got to say is that I did struggle with the maths and English at first, but was absolutely excelling at sciences, the physics and you know, the chemistry I absolutely loved, and I paid more attention to that, like making circuit boards when I got home at night, and you know, very, like I say, technical minded, if you like.
Yeah.
And then I realised that, you know, you have to do the maths and English as well. So, yeah, I caught up with that. Yeah.
It's not uncommon for children
not to make
that link at early stages.
Yeah.
All right. So, did you really have sort of any thoughts of going into, well, where you ended up in the medical profession?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a fairly early theme, was it?
Well, as it happened, I had an interest in if you like, saving lives. So I used to do life-saving clubs. So when I was about 13, I joined the life-saving club at Yeovil swimming pool. And in actual fact, my first job was as a lifeguard in the swimming pool and swimming teacher.
Oh, I see.
So I used to get involved. I was always in the pool. I was in there 7 o'clock in the morning, every morning training, at night doing the water polo, life-saving. Mm. So I had a, obviously I was doing basic life support and teaching that in that time. But no, I didn't really sort of see a career in sort of the medical aspect of it until quite later on, natural factors. We'll find out a bit later on.
Get through the interview. Yeah. Okay, so you left school, what, at 16 or 18?
At 16, yeah. 16, yeah.
And so you decided not to do the uni thing, did you?
Or? No, well, in fact, I went to college and started my ONC in engineering. And that's when I decided I want to go in the forces. Yeah, right. And I thought, okay, yeah, the Air Force is the thing for me. I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
At the time, there was a long wait to get into the Air Force. So I did the first year of my ONC and then spent a year as a full-time lifeguard and swimming instructor.
Okay.
Up until the age of 18, waiting to go in the forces.
Ah, so that was like an in-between job.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I had to do a lot of fitness and, you know, that fit in well with my lifestyle because I was doing it anyway.
I see. So you joined the RAF. That wasn't local, though?
No. So I was up in Lincoln for that. So I did my basic training up there.
Right.
We did 6 weeks basic training, then went down to Holton and did my mechanics training. And it was all about the mechanics then, you know. And I loved aircraft. So, you know, fixing aircraft and that was really, you know, what I wanted to do. And I didn't sort of, again, think of anything outside of engineering, to be honest with you.
Mm. Okay. Well, this is developing nicely because you ended up not in engineering at all.
Exactly.
Well, I suppose you could say engineering in
the
very loose sense.
Yeah.
But we'll move on to that in a minute. So shall we have your second track?
Okay.
It's Phil Collins, isn't it?
That's it. Absolutely, yeah.
In the air tonight. And what's the history of this one?
Well, the influence favorite? Again, guess what? Yeah, is it was always on. Phil Collins and my dad, you know, he was playing it all the time. So it's one of those things in the early ages, like the Bungle in the Jungle and Phil Collins that I grew up with, Eric Clapton, you know, those sorts of artists. So, yeah, stuck with me.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll give it a play. Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight. This is a 2015 remastered version. I don't know what that means, really, but from 1981, his debut single, in fact, from the album Face Value.
So you can wipe out that.
Phil Collins in the air tonight. And in the studio this morning, I have Pete Chell, who is the owner of Evolution Aesthetics. We've been talking a little bit about Pete's early life and the fact that he ended up in the RAF. Just while the track was playing, Pete was sort of saying he had a little bit of a disturbed night with the grandchildren. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct. Bless them. Yeah. Hello, Esme and Mason. I know you're listening there.
what age are they?
They're 5 and 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're staying with you?
They're staying just over the weekend, yeah. So we have them quite a bit, actually. I do take them swimming, obviously. The ex-swimming teacher.
Yeah.
Got to get the kids in the pool.
Yeah, too
and
right.
They're doing really well at that. So well done, guys.
Yeah, good, good. Excellent. So you've got something planned for the rest of the weekend,
have
you?
We have, yeah, yeah.
Good, good. Okay, so back to the story. You then left school, you had a job in between times and then ended up in the RAF.
Yeah.
And that was based in, what did you say, Lincolnshire?
Well, first off, I did my basic training there and went down to RAF Holton, which is now actually where they do the basic training.
Yep.
And I moved on from there to RAF Manston, which is actually on the coast.
Okay.
And that was part of Search and Rescue, 202 Squadron, and VAS, which is the Visiting Aircraft Section, which was very interesting, I've got to say, to work at.
And what were you actually doing?
So we were seeing all NATO aircraft coming in. So we did first line servicing on them, so that would be anything from the Lynxes to Phantoms, Tornadoes, you know, across the board. So we saw it all, and a lot of NATO aircraft as well used to stage in. I also used to go flying with Fisheries Protection as well along the coast, so that was a nice little jolly out with the RAF, and I did a little bit of flying with the chipmunks down there, but I never did get my pilot's license, so feet firmly on the ground for me.
I see. So there's an engineering theme there again, isn't there? Because you're working on aircraft.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's the main job.
Yeah, yeah, that's it, yeah.
Okay, so this is all about to take a turn in a different direction.
It is
a while,
soon, yeah.
But, okay, the RAF then, after all the basic training was done, you ended up abroad, I think, didn't you?
That's it, yeah. I was in RAF Gutterslow for a couple of years. I was working there on the Harriers.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of field deployments there, so I saw a lot of the countryside.
Yeah.
That was very hard work, I've got to say, because we were in Greece, we were in Sardinia, Cyprus. We moved around an awful lot with the squadron.
Yeah.
And I met a great lot of mates, actually, I've got to say. It was a very close knit community within the forces. Guys I still keep in touch with now, actually, even after all this time.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it. Yeah.
That's a theme of being in the forces, isn't it? You
definitely
make some very, very close friendships.
Yeah, very much so.
So what's it like then, for those of us who have never done that before? Somebody comes along and says to you, next week you're off to some completely different country. Presumably you have to sort of pack up your life and just move.
That's absolutely right, yeah. And that's the thing, is that when you go into the forces, you've just got to be mindful of the fact that, you will have to at some point maybe... very short notice, going into the medical side of things, I used to do medical evacuations. And so within half an hour, I'd be deployed out to say Cyprus or somewhere to go and pick up casualties. So,
It's not everybody's.
It's not your 9-to-5 job, put it that way. No.
Okay, so you did the engineering bit within the RAF for how many years?
So it must have been about 4.5 years so, I think it was, yeah.
Okay. But then this is where life started to take a bit of a twist, wasn't it?
It did, actually. Well, the funny old thing is that, because I was working on the jets, to actually work in civilian life, you've got to have certain licenses. And getting very competent on servicing Harriers doesn't kind of translate into civilian life. And I was kind of mindful of the fact that, I do need to create a life for myself. And it just so happens that I saw this post for a theatre technician advertised. I thought it was medical electronics, first off. I went and read up about it and found out, no, it wasn't. It was all about actually sitting in surgery and, across the medical board doing a very kind of wide variety of procedures, assisting in procedures. So that took my fancy,
did. I'm really curious about that, because having been an engineer then, and everything that you've told us about your background is engineering, why suddenly medicine?
Well, it just fascinated me. Actually, reading through the book, and the book was, it's an air publication. It's very, very, very thick, put it that way.
Yeah.
And I don't particularly like reading unless it's very interesting. I read that thing cover to cover and thought, no, this is for me. However, the thing started there that I had to obviously be interviewed and go for selection for the new post. And actually, something like 350 people went for it. I think 160 were interviewed. And I was one of the lucky 8 that got the job.
Gosh.
So, I was really up against it. And it really turned my life. It really did.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the training and everything about it. But we'll obviously
Absolutely. So this then led to you leaving. Not at this point. You went into theatre.
That's right. Yeah.
Technician. With the RAF. So where is that based? Is that still based abroad? Or
it was actually based. I was based in Halton Hospital, but from there I went to Luton Dunstable Harefield Hospital. So I was assisting in cardiothoracic surgery there, heart transplants, and that's one of my kind of things that I was very fascinated in.
So you're still in the forces, but you're
still in the forces,
working in civilian hospitals.
To gain experience, obviously, because. Within the forces, there's sort of limited experience you can get, and you obviously need to hit a theatre of war, if you like, running and being able to know what to do. So, yeah, we went into major trauma centres for our training, which I found fantastic in terms of the experience that I got and the support you got from specialists in those particular fields. Obviously, plastics was one of the things. Obviously a little bit more into what we're doing now, like liposuction and plastic surgery for burns, you know, reductions, enlargements and the rest of it, without too much detail.
Yeah. Okay, it's a morning show. People may still be having their breakfast, but... Okay, so none of that fazed you at all, the sort of gory details of working
Not
in a theatre?
Not at all, no. I was always worried about the first cut and watching that, because I understood that a lot of people fainted. I didn't. I was in there. I was very excited about that and seeing what's underneath. Because obviously, as a kid, I like to take things apart, and to have surgeons that would let you look into people's bodies, and assist in surgery was absolutely fascinating. So I was like, well made up, to be honest with you. What a job!
So this is the inquiring mind coming through.
It is, very much so.
That's behind all the technical stuff that you did previously.
And just
translate it into the medical world.
Yeah, very much so. And so much so is that, it's for me when things go wrong as well. The body works and functions a certain way. Yeah. What happens when the heart actually doesn't, and what happens to the person, and what can you do about it? So that actually piqued my interest then to do advanced life support. So I teach for the Resuscitation Council UK, an advanced life support instructor. Yeah. And also I teach the teachers that teach advanced life support, so a generic instructor course instructor.
Yeah, okay.
And I've been abroad doing that as well for the European Resuscitation Council. The group of people that I get to kind of network with, are from this country, from other countries, again, was absolutely fantastic because, you're getting to get all the great experience from all the best people, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So just going back then to the RAF side of it, how long were you in the theatre technician side of things with the RAF?
So I was there for about 3 years.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And I was posted to... hospital, unfortunately, because of the cuts at the time, was closed. So it came to a point where it was either to follow the career path within the sort of joint services or actually to go back into the NHS. So I thought, well, actually, I've gained all this experience. I would like now to go back into the NHS and carry that on. So that's what I did.
But you were still only 25.
Yeah.
So you'd crammed an awful lot.
I did, actually.
Yeah. For a few years, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's very good. So you ended up then back in Yeovil.
That's right, yeah.
So Yeovil Hospital.
Yeah, I started there. I was got a job. It's funny, actually, because I went for an informal interview with the theatre manager at the time. And he said, we've got sort of vacancies. When can you start? And I said, a year, because at that time it was a year to actually leave the forces. Yeah. But because my hospital was closing, they let me go a bit early.
Right.
So I literally left the RAF on the Friday and went to the NHS on the Monday. Very smooth transition,
Okay. We're going to explore a little bit more about that in a moment.
Okay.
And we're going to see how that then translates over to you sort of becoming your own boss, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got another track coming up, and this time it's a bit of Michael Jackson.
Right, yes.
And tell me about this one, then.
Well, I've got to say is that I used to like to go and see Michael Jackson concerts. The guy was just amazing on stage, I've got to say.
You've seen him live, yeah.
I've seen him live quite a few times, yeah. Uh-huh. And, and I've got to say, I do like a little bit of a boogie. I do manage to clear a dance floor, I've got to say. I don't do that too much these days, but I did have a little dance last night in the kitchen with the grandchildren. So,
Well, we'll visualise that as we hear Michael Jackson and the Earth Song.
You said we were to gain. What about killing fields? Is there a time? What about all the things that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice all the blood we've shed before? Did you ever stop to notice this crying earth, this weeping shore?
Well, wonderful stuff there. Michael Jackson and the Earth Song from 1995. And in the studio today, Folkstales, we have Peter Chell. Peter is the main man behind Evolution Aesthetics. And we've been talking a little bit about Peter's early life. And we've got Peter as far as you being with the NHS in Yeovil.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. So tell us what that was like. I mean, how long were you there and what did you end up doing?
Yeah, I was in the operating theatre there. So I used to go into sort of day surgery, main theatres and gynae. And actually at that point, I really enjoyed teaching. So on a Friday afternoon, I used to get the mannequins out and do some basic life support and intermediate life support with with the teams there. That got picked up actually by the director and manager and said, would you like to secondment into the training department? Which I ripped a hand off and said, yes, please, because I had a very keen interest in teaching. And that secondment lasted 3.5 years.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was quite a long
one.
More
permanent.
Yeah, that's absolutely. But I gained a lot of experience and education within that. I was working with a really good team. My kind of remit was actually quite extent from the centre coordinator for the MVQs and teaching clinical skills, resuscitation, mandatory training. So I had to kind of...
Teaching this to who? To doctors and nurses?
From healthcare assistants through to consultants, all the way through. So doing trust inductions. Everyone obviously has a duty to go and do their CPD and their continuing education. So that was part of that, really.
Okay, so you mentioned CPD, continuing professional development. So that's the type of thing you were doing, really. I mean, you tend to think of doctors by the time they get into a hospital, you hope they're reasonably well trained.
They know how to
do CPR, I would imagine. But this is something that you were there to make sure that everybody remains up to date in current practice.
That's correct, as part of the team, And then that involved, obviously, myself going off and doing courses as well. So make sure that I'm current, to be able to teach the current practices. which, you know, I found fascinating again because I was kind of like really pushing myself and got qualified in education as well as the kind of medical aspects of things I was teaching.
Yeah.
So I was teaching across the board with anaphylaxis and vena puncture and things. So it was a really interesting job, in actual fact. But I kept my hand in the emergency department and in theatres as well. So I used to go down there and across the departments teaching. And, you know, I think it's important, you know, even today that, you know, if you're teaching it, you should be doing it. Mm. And that's why I've kept up with my sort of my practitioner's job as well as obviously the new thing that
we'll come to discussing. Yeah. Quite right. So what was the NHS like in those? This is the late 90s, wasn't it?
It was.
Well, I mean, the NHS at the moment has a lot of publicity, tends to be not always the best publicity. There's a lot of pressures going on.
Yeah, definitely.
Was it better then or is it much the same?
I've got to say the theatre teams were absolutely fantastic. You know, there were such a good bunch and they got on and they did their work, you know, and everybody worked very, very much as a team. And you have to in those circumstances when you're working in critical care areas. It was the external kind of pressures, you know, of waiting lists and making sure that things are done in accordance with sort of guidelines and regulations. And that's the heavy bit of the NHS is the outside your sort of your normal work role, which, you know, not for some people.
No. Okay. All right. So you did a few years there with the NHS based in Yeovil and somewhere along the line you got married.
I did. Yeah. I was, I came out of the Air Force and I was single at that time and then fell in love with a lady that had four children. You know, so I got married and then obviously looked after the four stepchildren as they were growing up.
Ready-made family,
absolutely. So I sold my house, moved in, and there we go. You know? Right up to date there. But
couldn't be better, really.
But lovely girls, absolutely fantastic girls, and we see them a lot. You know, and I couldn't have wanted for a better family.
You've already mentioned you've got a couple of grandchildren.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Chloe's got the two, Esme and Mason, who I see on a regular basis. You know, they're also fascinated in everything I do.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get out the little mannequins, the baby mannequins, and I'll teach them how to do a little bit of CPR, you know, what to do and how to respond in emergencies. They love it all. They absolutely love it all.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that kids like.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, definitely. Gory detail. Yeah.
All right. So you were in the NHS until 2001.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And what made you leave? What prompted that then?
Well, as it happens, I was, as a theatre practitioner, I was going around and doing sort of, believe it or not, rehab in the community, which is a scheme to keep people out of hospital. Mm-hmm. And I was working across a couple of trusts. And I think at that point, I came to the decision that, you know what, I could be doing this privately for myself and probably actually having a better work-life balance, to be fair. And it was about that. And so, yeah, I started Quest Training Development back in 2001, which is still running to date.
Yeah, this is QTD.
That's your other business. And within that, so I used to do teach the diploma in movement handling, used to teach clinical skills, masterclasses in vena puncture. And obviously that the big thing, which is the resuscitation training, which I carried on from the NHS.
And this is teaching to professionals.
That's it, yeah.
And what groups of professionals? How did you find them? How did you persuade them to come?
Well, yeah, I mean, some of it was kind of like just literally phoning up hospitals and saying, are you in need of services, mail shots? And I actually found a niche in the market, if you like, with teaching dentists medical emergencies.
Okay. Yeah.
I put together some great courses, which wasn't the normal blow push on a mannequin. It's about kind of human factors in resuscitation, things that influence your decision when you're looking after a person that's not very well.
Okay.
So I formulated quite a few courses, which I provided, and word of mouth got around. And I've got a good group of some fantastic dentists that I teach, GPs as well. I also teach for NHS professionals and universities. So it's actually quite wide-reaching.
And this is, again, about keeping their professional skills up to date and on the button so that you know, they can tick all the boxes, and if they get a negligence claim, they can point at the certificate you've given them and say, no, I was trained.
Yeah, the thing is that things do change, and it's sometimes quite hard to keep up to date with everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got somebody that's particularly good and has researched, for example, resuscitation, you can go to that person, you can get all the up-to-date information, you know, it's credible, the person's credible, which means to say is that, you know, I've had people come up to me or phone me and said, you know what, I came across somebody that was choking the other day, and this is somebody that was a secretary in a dental practice that had never done anything before. I came across this person. They were blue around the face. She said, I instinctively thought of you because I put a lot of makeup on and I do very kind of like high fidelity training, yeah, I've got to say. Yeah. And she said, you know, I did some back blows, abdominal thrusts, and I saved someone's life. And she said, I can't believe that I wouldn't have known how to do that 6 months ago.
Right.
So these sorts of things are really important. And, you know, to save a life doesn't take much.
So how did you find your initial clients then? Because it's one thing sort of leaving the NHS and having an idea, but, you know, a lot of businesses have that and don't necessarily do so well.
Yeah, well, it's about being very determined, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I took on board first off back in those days is that, you know, to get somebody to build a website was very expensive. So I learned how to do that. Yeah. To market, I learned how to do that.
Okay.
So in actual fact, you know, I've made mistakes along the way, by the way.
Course,
you know, it's kind of one of those things where it kind of develops and evolves. Mm. And I had some fantastic courses. And what I did, I wrote courses that were different than everyone else so that, you know, people in private hospitals could do their mandatory training all in one day rather than having to go out, you know, for 2 hours here, 2 hours there. Mm. So, and that kind of took me on board and actually into the aesthetic world as it happens. And that was a kind of point where I thought, you know what, there are other roles out there. So I started looking again at how could I develop the business and what could I do with the business.
Right. Okay. And a brave step, obviously setting out on your own. Did you ever have one of those moments where you thought, what have I done?
Quite often. I did actually. And then on that side of thing is that if you don't take risks in life, then, you know, nothing will change. So, yeah, it was a bit of a risk. I had a very supportive wife, I've got to say, because I was away a lot. I was away around the country. Mm. You know, I could be in Scotland one day, London the next, Southampton the next. And that's what needed to happen to develop and to build the business.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Let's take another track, shall we? And then we will talk then about the sort of evolution side of
Fantastic,
it.
Fantastic, yeah.
Because that's the next stage in your life. We've got some Robbie Williams and Angels. Why this one?
Well, when I'm on holiday, I like to sing a little bit of Robbie Williams, and this will be the one that I pick.
Okay, well, no better reason. Here we go. Angels by Robbie Williams.
I sit and wait. There's an angel contemplate my fate. Do they know the places where we go when we're gray and old? 'Cause I have been told that salvation lets their wings unfold. So when I'm lying in my bed, thoughts running through my head, and I feel that love is dead, I'm loving angels instead. And through it, forsake me. I'm loving angels instead. When I'm feeling weak and my pain walks down a one-way street, I look above and I know
we have Robbie Williams with Angels from 1997. His best-selling single, I believe. Anyway, it's Folk Tales on Abbey 104. I'm Terry Bennett, and in the studio with me, I have got Pete Chell. And we've been hearing a lot, Pete, about your early life, how you came to work in the RAF and the NHS, and then you took the bold step of setting up your own business, being QTD, Quest Training and Development. And we came fairly well up to date now, and you took a decision not that long ago to branch out into another arm. Tell us about that.
I did. Well, there's an interesting thing. As obviously I said, I'm very curious about kind of advancements in medicine and, best practice, really. And it just so happens that I was teaching in aesthetic clinics, and I saw this fantastic thing about fat removal.
First of all, before you go on to that, what is an aesthetics clinic? I mean, aesthetics, I tend to say beauty. Is that what you mean?
Well, some have elements of beauty, some have elements of aesthetics. So it would be something that's not beauty therapy, that's not maybe surgery.
Right.
Although some do go on and do, obviously, a collection of those. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of, if you like, sat in the middle in terms of the things I provide in aesthetics.
Right.
So we don't do the pampering side of things. We do the more kind of hands-on, and this is where we want to go. And
so what led you into this then?
Well, yeah, I mean, going back to this, I saw this fantastic bit of kit that does cryolipolysis, which is fat freezing from the outside.
Did you say that word again?
Cryolipolysis.
Okay, right.
And cryo
meaning something to do with freezing.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And lipolysis is basically death of the tissue or the fat.
As in liposuction.
I mean.
Okay, so that's how the word's derived, but it's not liposuction.
Yeah, the liposuction was pretty much the rapid way to get rid of fat in the past, which I used to scrub for liposuction as a theatre practitioner. And I saw this device that will actually do this externally. And I thought, well, that's got to be good. And I spoke to my wife about it, and she said, wow, I'd have it done right away. Because there's no anaesthetic, there's no downtime or anything. So I found out about it. And I said to my wife, you know what? And as a joint decision, let's start a business doing aesthetics. So a couple of years ago, I started looking into what I needed to do myself to be able to provide this, where we'd need to go, what equipment we'd need. And that really kind of, put together the business plan to start Evolution Aesthetics.
Okay. So, I mean, looking from a layman's point of view, what qualifications do you need to get into that kind of thing?
Well, you ideally need a medical background.
Yeah,
which you've got.
Yeah.
But I made a decision that I was actually going to do a diploma in beauty, mm-hmm. so that I had the medical qualification and also the beauty side of it. Because I wanted, going into the industry, I want to know all about it. So I did that. So I did the diploma course. I got a funny look or two when I was on the course, because I was the only the chap on there. However, you know, that didn't bother me at all. I got my head sucked down. I did the body and the face electrics. So I had a really good underpinning knowledge in terms of equipment that you could use, and then obviously the correct procedures for it. But then moving on to the other equipment, and then I did qualifications in each of the systems that I use now, and had to be assessed against the standards for the for that equipment, and then obviously get some validation from insurance companies to be able to provide that. So, you know, I'm listed as a qualified practitioner for the devices that I use.
Okay.
I've got a lot of family and friends that have benefited from that, I've got to say, because within that you've got to have a lot of practice, make sure your systems of work are safe, and then obviously you would then start practicing under supervision on the public.
Okay. So you set up Evolution Aesthetics.
Yeah.
That was the name. How did you get the name?
From Evolution, really, of the medical kit, from liposuction to cryolipolysis. There's others that are on the market now, which is HIFU, which is another thing that we'll talk about in a moment. Yeah. And also the evolution of the body, the changing of the body. You know, it's not changing necessarily it's surgery, but some of these are very subtle changes, you know, lumps, bumps that people want to get rid of, that the mummy tummy advert, you know, and that's a big thing.
I am the man behind the mummy tummy.
And we've got very effective treatments for that. And that's a thing, it works. And to see somebody, you know, with a smile on their face, having had the procedure and having kind of like tried for a long time in the gym to get rid of their mummy tummy. They come along, and a lot of people don't realise how simple these procedures are, and safe and effective as well.
So you set this up, about 2 years ago?
Well, we started doing the business plan about 2 years, looking for the premises, then buying in the equipment, getting the qualifications.
Yeah.
And then we really started in September with a soft launch. So we're at West Down Farm, next to Another Little World, which is beauty therapy.
Okay.
And we work very well together.
Court and Denham.
Court and Denham, that's it, yeah. And we really kicked off properly in January because of my other teaching commitments, which I still do.
Right.
It was a case of dropping one or the other, but I've managed to juggle it both now, which is quite good because it gives people reassurance, actually, that not only from an aesthetic point of view, you know, is that they're going to get well looked after.
Okay. So QTD, the Quest Training and Development, is still very much alive
it
and
is,
kicking.
Yeah, it
okay.
is.
And
yeah,
so you're doing so. Some of that, and then
I am. Yeah.
In between times, you're doing some aesthetics.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about your typical client. Who comes along for this type of treatment?
Terry, there's no typical client actually.
Well, I think that's a good answer.
Yeah. you know, it's men and women. I look at people from 21 years of age up into about 71 years of age, 72. There's no kind of real cutoff, but you find that at certain ages, people want things like their bingo wings looked at, their skin tightening. So there is no kind of absolute. As long as a person's medically fit for the procedure, which is done under consultation, so we're very sort of ethical with that. So if the person is not able, because of medical background, to have a procedure, then we won't, obviously. But provided that, you know, that there's a kind of relationship between you and the client, because it's, you know, at the end of the day, that the fat removal, for example, is very effective. But if the person continues on that lifestyle that may be added to, you know, circumference expansion, if you like, you know, they'll go back there. So we try to give them support as well with that.
Okay. All right. So it's all strictly non-invasive.
Yes.
So there's no knives involved.
No.
No pain.
No pain, actually. Mm-hmm. I would say strange sensations. Now, imagine just having your tummy fat sucked up into a cup and frozen. You can imagine that's going to feel funny.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
And the other one we do, which is high-intensity focus ultrasound for faces and bodies, it's basically burning the fat from above without disrupting the skin surface. So it works really effectively. So we've got freezing and burning externally, which gets rid of fat pockets.
I'm going to ask a really stupid question here. I mean, if you freeze body fat, which is what you're doing, surely it thaws out again.
That's a good question, actually. Well, actually, once the fat crystallizes, it breaks down into water and triglycerides.
Okay.
And they're excreted from the body.
Right. Okay.
Nice and simple. It's very natural cell death of the tissue, I've got to say, of the fat. So you're forcing in nature what would happen if you exercise, you know, in a particular way. But we're able to target that. So if it's the stomach, the, you know, inner legs, the buttocks, whatever, we can actually target that fat and sculpt the body, really.
And you manage to do that. You just target the fat without sucking up your kidneys or something.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
Which wouldn't be good, would it?
No, that's it. If I'm sucking up kidney, there's something really wrong. but no, it doesn't actually damage any of the other organs because we're very selective in the parts that we freeze, the parts that we treat. So that's done, again, under assessment. Yeah. So if the person's not got enough to freeze or to use the HIFU with, then we'll think of other procedures. Okay. So we've got quite a lot in our toolbox.
Oh, excellent. Look, the clock is ticking. We've got another couple of tracks. We'll play out with one of them. But the next one you've chosen is by Lucas Graham, which is a Danish soul pop band. Where's this one come from?
Grandchildren.
Okay.
They love this song and we sing along to it. And also, I was thinking about today, we've talked about my life and it's, you know, Lucas Graham's talking about his, you know, from the 7 years age. Okay. So it's, you know, it's kind of
topical. Lucas Graham, 7 years, here we go.
Once I was 7 years old, my mama told me, go make yourself some friends or you'll be lonely. Once I was 7 years old, it was a big, big world, but we thought we were bigger, pushing each other to the limits. We were learning quicker, by 11, smoking herb and drinking burning liquor. Never rich, so we were out to make that steady figure. Once I was 11 years old, my daddy told me, go get yourself a wife or you'll be lonely. Once I was 11 years old, always had that dream like my daddy before me. So I started writing songs, I started writing stories. Something about that glory just always seemed to bore me, cause only those I really love will ever really know me. Once I was 20 years old, my story got told before the morning sun when life was lonely. Once I was 20 years
That's Lucas Graham with 7 Years, number from 2015. The clock is not with us here, Pete. It's now sort of 6 minutes to go. I think we've got an awful lot more to talk about. But anyway,
okay.
We've got as far as you've got Evolution Aesthetics
yes.
up and running.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Well, I mean, really, I mean, we started really getting going in January. I'd like to be able to, you know, spread the word that
yeah.
we're here.
Yeah.
You don't have to go up to Harley Street to get Harley Street professionalism. And also the clinic, if you want to come out and see it, it's lovely. It's a state of the art machines. We would love people to come and use the clinic.
Yeah, okay.
We would love people to be able to get the benefits of the treatments that we provide. You've only got to talk to us and have a free consultation.
So you're quite happy for people to sort of come along and say, not sure whether I really want this, but tell me about
Absolutely, yeah. Because as I said, it's a relationship, you know, and we wouldn't do anything that isn't suitable. We might suggest that, you know, it is surgery, perhaps. Yep. It might suggest that, you know, you don't need it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Of course. No.
You know, and people will and have liked the fact that we're honest that. So,
yeah.
You know, we would like to be able to, you know, be the sort of household name of Sherborne. You know, we're the aesthetic place to go to.
Absolutely. So plans for the future then? You've got another business in mind? Or
We've got two treatment rooms at the clinic, mm-hmm. As well as a big reception area. We'd like to get those two treatment rooms. So we've got a body and face treatment room. Mm. And we'd like to get them busy. And we'd like to be able to kind of spread the word with the radio, you know. So, Sherborne Times and everything. So we're here.
No big changes of direction. You've had in your life.
No, there might be treatments that we're going to pioneer. Mm. We're not pioneer, but we'll probably be one of the first to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep that under wraps. I don't want people nicking the idea.
No, no.
But no, we're going to evolve the business.
Yeah.
We will. As technology evolves, we will evolve with that and wonderful. Provide the latest up-to-date aesthetic treatments. Yeah.
Sounds very interesting. I'm going to pop out and see you sometime.
Okay,
not because I necessarily want one of your procedures, but I'm just interested
in the
place.
Yeah, come out and have a look. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Look, we've missed a little bit of interest along the way because you're involved in the Glastonbury Festival.
I am involved in Glastonbury, yeah.
And I
work for the Festival Medical Services
and
have done for 20 years. Yeah. So I've been out there for many years in the muck and guts of Glastonbury, you know, picking up people. So working on the ambulances there.
Yeah.
And I've met some great people again, some fantastic stars, if you like, that very, very nice people to talk to, you know. And I've really enjoyed doing that.
Doing what out there? Again, this is on sort of
emergency care,
life
yeah.
support and that sort
That's
of thing.
It, yeah. So this is first response on the ambulances. So we're looking after people that have, you know, collapsed through medical reasons you know, other things. That,
go on, drop a few names then.
Oh, Sheryl Crow, Sting, Van Morrison, Kaiser Chiefs, Ash, you know, you name it. I've met a lot of people and it's been fantastic.
They're all on speed dial.
They're all, not quite.
Oh, well, that's excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, so personally, you're obviously married. We said about the grandchildren.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Interests outside work? How do you relax?
Well,
Don't have much time for it.
Not time for that. I got to say is that the relaxing comes at the weekends, having the grandchildren, taking them out, you know, on nature trails and things like that.
Yeah.
I also like swimming, going to the gym and, you know, other things as well.
Yeah.
And I think as things settle down in terms of, sort of planning for the future for the clinic, is that I'll be able to get that work-life balance back that I can, you know, leave the clinic and go off do some fishing or go down the coast or you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sort of fully committed to obviously making this business work. And then you've got to put the hours in to be able to do that.
I think any small business owner that listening will know that only too well.
It's not easy.
It's not a 9-to-5 thing, is it?
It's not, no.
And
it's
particularly, you've got two businesses, so you're still sort of managing the other one as well, aren't you?
But there's benefits as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's really being your own boss, making your own decisions.
Yeah.
It's I wouldn't change it for the world, honestly.
Lovely. Okay, look, it's a couple of minutes too. You've got one final one, which we're going to sort of fade up in the background. This is Ed Sheeran.
Uh-huh.
And Lego House. Why this one?
Oh, well, again, I've got to say is that we will sing this on a Saturday evening with a Lego with the kids.
Okay.
And
right,
so, yeah, very much orientated, yeah.
All right. Pete, it's been a great pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you very much
for coming in and telling us your story. I hope the businesses continue to go really well. I'm sure they will.
Thank
because,
you.
Because your enthusiasm for it just sort of comes through and
great.
I'm sure they're going to be a great success.
Thanks very much for having me.
Right.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. If things go right, frame it and put you on a wall.
It's so hard to say it, but I've been it for. Now I'll surrender up my heart and swap it for yours. I'm out of touch, I'm out of love. I'll pick you up when you're getting down. And out of all these things I've done, I think I love you better now. I'm out of sight, I'm out of mind. I'll do it all for you in time. And out of all these things I've done, I think I love you better now. Don't hold me down. I think the braces are breaking, and it's more than I can take. And it's dark in the cold December, but I got you to give me room. If you're broken, I will mend you, and I keep you sheltered from the storm that's raging on now. I'm out of touch.
I'm out of 104.7 and online.
This is Abbey 104.